Welcome back to my show, Moving to New York. And to me, New York is about pivoting, reinvention, landing, you know, hitting the ground running, and constantly moving. And there's no better guest to embody all this than Steve McCallan, one of my best friends in the whole world. We've actually known each other 10 years this year. We met in December 1st of 2003. And my life changed forever when I met Steve McCallan.
Very sweet.
And so I always start out asking people two things. Number one, what was your date that you moved here, if you remember?
I moved here October 4th. What must have
2003.
Been, it must have been 2003.
So you're coming up on 10 years.
I'm I guess I am.
And what mode of transportation did you use to enter New York City?
I took a flight from London.
Okay.
And a taxi from the airport.
Of course you took a taxi. Steven is no stranger to taxis. I think he's met every taxi driver in New York City, but he maintains he's struggling and never has any money.
I've actually met a couple of the taxi drivers twice.
Of course you have, yeah. Okay.
There was this woman who was like, hey, you told me to go to Isabel's for lunch. It was delicious.
And of course you had a woman taxi driver. Oh my God, I love it. I had my first woman taxi driver just 2 days ago, actually.
Yeah.
I liked her a lot, and she was really mad at all the construction and all the guys who weren't telling us ahead of time not to go down the street. And she's like, aren't they all just so irresponsible? It was really funny. Anyway, Steven McCallan. Tell me, who was Steven McCallan when he landed here? And why did you come here in the first place? Tell me a little bit about what your life was like before.
Yeah, but so I never wanted to live in New York. I purposely moved to London
to what do you not mean, move
in. Because I had finished grad school in Philadelphia, and a lot of people came to New York or L.A. or other parts of the world, and I was determined to go to London. I have no idea why, because once I got to London, I didn't particularly like London, but I just never wanted to live in New York.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense that you would get on a plane and come here and not look back.
And then when I decided that I wanted to be a talk show host, there was no better place to do it. So I literally quit my job, moved into a conference room that friends were lending me, and started my quest to become something in television. And that's how I met you.
Okay, but before we get to the conference room, because we can't just skim over that detail that you lived in a conference room, how did you decide you wanted to be a talk show host?
Well, actually, it's a bit of a sad story. I was doing management consulting, so the positive side. And they were like, people would wind up telling me things in these management meetings that I would do one-on-one to try to diagnose the problem. And I would come out and I was like, okay, so here's the real problem. Like, you know, X is having an affair with Y, and this is causing tension amongst their teams. And, you know, and those are the issues that need to be solved. And so they would just be like, how do you find this stuff out? And I was like, people just tell me. And then I was like, or I think I just ask. So I kind of was joking. Somebody said, oh, you're just like Oprah. Hmm. And I was like, interesting. A 300-pound gay Oprah. But, well, then again, no. And so I... No, that's me.
And you said you wouldn't be funny, no, Steve McCallan.
So then a friend of mine... And so I was working this very intense job, literally 100 hours a week, always in the airport, traveling to some European destination for work, and I got a call. I had actually an email from someone I'd kind of known when I'd lived in Germany saying, hey, I need you to call me immediately. So I knew something was up, and what had happened is a friend of mine had passed away. Mm. Unexpectedly, traveling in Asia, had an aneurysm and died.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, my God, here I am working in this horrible, horrible, not a horrible job, but working in this job that's, like, stealing my soul, and if I died tomorrow... would I feel like I'd fulfilled my life? So I was like, okay, I had that, you know, moment and said, okay, if I'm honest with myself, what's the one thing you'd like to do but you're scared to do? And it was like, to be a talk show host. So okay. I moved to New York and started down a path to train myself to become a talk show host.
So, but how far, okay, so when you decided this, when you looked deep inside yourself and said, let me be honest with myself, from that moment till when you landed in New York, how much time passed?
4 months.
Wow.
And that was only because the company, when I went in to resign, they said, oh, wait a minute, it was 6 months. But when I went in to resign, they were like, but you can't leave now. You're doing so well. But it was funny because up until then, their model was like, you're never going to be smart enough. That's how they motivated you. it's really perverse. And so when I went in to resign, they're like, oh my God, you can't leave. So they gave me extra financial incentive to stay. And then they agreed to pay for my trip back.
Really?
So that's why they paid for my move back. So that's why I decided to stay.
Did you take
Otherwise, I would have moved immediately.
Did you take the time to save money?
Oh, I've never been very good at that.
Okay. So, even though you have a business degree.
When I was living in the conference room is when I save money.
Okay. So we're about to get to the conference room. So did you make calls asking people, can I crash on your couch? I mean, a conference room didn't occur to you.
No, I just, my good friends, we'll call them Joan and Mike. Uh-huh. I'll probably forget that and call them by their real names. They were big supporters of mine. And I said, hey, I'm thinking about moving to New York to be a talk show host. And they were like, we'd love to have you here. Why don't you just crash at this conference room that my parents own this building, and there's a pull-out sofa and a shower, and you can just stay until you get settled. So it wasn't like
But they thought it might be 3 weeks, 4 weeks, five weeks.
Oh, we all did.
Yeah.
Right? And so I was there, and then they realized that since Mike had to manage the building, I got some consulting gigs on the side, and he gave me an open office, and then I was starting to solve some of the issues for him in the building.
Of course.
So he was like, oh, I really like having you around. And then they were heading to Antarctica, as eccentric wealthy people do, and said, okay, don't leave now. Stay till through the end of the year. So I moved here in October. I was going to move out November 1st. And they were heading to Antarctica in early December. And they were like, we need someone to be here to look over the building, and we trust you. So just stay through the end of the year.
You had lived and worked in Manhattan briefly before? Or
never.
No, never.
Hackensack, okay. New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was duped. Because I'd received a job offer from undergrad to move to New York. And then the week before I moved, they said that the offers in New York had been oversubscribed. So they put me in the Hackensack, New Jersey office. And being from the Midwest, they said, oh, it'll be just like New York.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Hackensack is not New York.
No, bet you not.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, bet you not.
Oofta.
So, what was you arrive, you spend your first night in a conference room. Do you wake up thinking, I'm going to conquer the world and be a talk show host? Or do you wake up thinking, what the hell did I just do?
No, I literally woke up and said, okay, what do I need to do?
Okay. You are like, I think you and I are similar in that we're both like dogs turned into another direction and we don't really look back.
Well, I made the choice. I was excited to be here. So I was like, what do I do next? Right.
Yeah, but people make choices and then wake up and go, oh shit, what the hell did I just do?
I think we do that more. I think we do that more in relationships than we do in jobs. But
maybe. Not my current one.
I just remember going about, okay, I need to lose weight because I weighed over 300 pounds because I was stressed from my job. I was like, I need to figure out how to become a talk show host. So I just started talking to people and saying, hey, do you know anyone? Like, can you point me in the right direction? So I wound up signing for a bunch of classes, doing some yoga. I had this crazy Brazilian personal trainer who was really cheap, really affordable. I wound up being later the best man in his wedding.
I was the date at that wedding, so I remember very well.
And I just remember then I started like, okay, how can I produce a talk show? And then people said, oh, you should get it on MNN. And then that's when I met you. And
right. MNN, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, the community access TV station of Manhattan.
But you learned a lot doing the series as well. And we had a lot of fun.
Yeah. So what was your, like, you lived in the conference room a year or a year and 2 months?
18 months.
18 months you lived. So, but what's fascinating, what you're skimming over, because it's your life and you're taking, you just don't understand how fascinating it is, your daily ritual. In this conference room.
Well, I had to be out of the conference room before 8 a.m. But the incentive was, the benefit was, is that I would actually just go to the gym and then work out and then shower at the gym.
But you brought up coffee and bagels to your friends Mike and Joan every day because they lived in this building.
Right. Well, they lived in the penthouse upstairs. Yeah. So they had, their apartment was featured in Architectural Digest very often. So they had a very glamorous life and I kind of participated in it slightly. And then the one thing in return for them not charging me rent at the time was, and they're the ones that continuously asked me to stay. I kept trying to move out. But so when I would go upstairs and bring them their bagels and stuff, after a while.
You started coming up with a camera crew, me.
Right. That was just because somebody said, oh, you should film the making of the talk show.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're getting off track. What was the question?
What was your daily ritual? So you got out
My daily ritual was I get up, I would go bring them breakfast, I would go to the gym, and then I would do my consulting work. Mike lent me some office space because it was available. And then I couldn't go back to the conference room until after 6:30 in the evening. Okay. And my clothes were stored in a suitcase in the basement, which seemed completely normal to me at the time.
So this whole time, like let's say this 18 months, are you settling into Manhattan thinking maybe this is the only place I can live? Or are you still looking at it like it's just going to serve the purpose it needs for you and you'll be out of here?
It was always like, let's see where this chapter in my life takes me.
Okay. So you were just going with it.
Right.
Going with a wave of Manhattan, as dirty as that can be.
Yeah. I was just more like, I was going more with the wave of how do I get into television? Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't about Manhattan.
Right. So what happened? Did you do a talk show?
I think you know that. I think I was a little bit insecure. I partnered with somebody else and we created this dual talk show. And, you know, I think it was a good experience. I learned a lot and actually learned that I liked producing rather than being in front of the camera. Mm-hmm.
You were very good at that.
Thank you. Yeah. And so that led me to start exploring other options. And that's kind of where I am today.
Amazing. So 10 years in New York.
Right. 10 years in New York. Still
you're ready to go,
a work
right?
in progress. And yeah, and now I'm looking at moving to like LA or Vancouver. Hmm. So
LA or Vancouver. I will be very sad if you do that.
I will be too, but I think I'm just ready for the next chapter. And that's where my business is taking me.
How long have you felt the urge to leave? Because I felt it pulling me out. I felt an urge pulling me out of the city for 5 to 6 to 7 years. But I never actually go on it. And if I do, it's only for a month at a time or 2 weeks at a time. Because moving back to New York is very hard. That's how I see it. Like, moving here once is hard enough.
For me, I think it was more life stage than anything else. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the city. Mm-hmm. It's more that many of my friends were starting to have kids. Mm-hmm. And it changes the dynamics of your friendship. So the going out and having fun all the time and people being flexible and open... available, like that changes, right? Yeah. So then it's the city starts to become, and it's a uniquely New York thing where if I want to see someone, I have to book it 6 weeks in advance,
right?
Which that's not how I like to live. Right. I like to be like, hey, do you guys want to come over for dinner tomorrow night? And people are like, sure, right? But in somehow in New York, that just doesn't happen, and I'm guilty of it too.
You and I were pretty spontaneous this weekend.
Right.
A day ahead.
Right. But how many times do we try to be spontaneous and it doesn't work out?
It's true.
Right.
Because we're all doing a million things. We have our day job for money and we have our dreams that we're pursuing. I find that a lot here, that people have their money work and then they have their dream work and then they have their social life and then they have their relationship.
Or they have their kids. Or as people get more comfortable in their careers, those that chose a more traditional path, they have like homes outside the city on the weekends. And those are just, you know, things that... I'm not ready for. So,
what would you tell someone you met now who reminded you of yourself 10 years ago about to move to New York to pursue their dreams?
Well, I would just, don't be afraid. There's nothing about New York that's afraid. The one thing that I remember, one thing that surprised me is I was in a Weight Watchers meeting and I remember I'd started losing like really quickly large amounts of weight. And I just remember like everyone in the meeting was like, you know, oh sweetie, you gotta go to Sims and get some pants, you know. And like, and that it's like, I don't know why I remember that moment, but it's actually like New Yorkers are very helpful. And even though there's not this overt sense of community, the moment you need help, like people immediately step in.
I agree.
I think that's like something about the city that's unique and that I like. And I like living, I've always lived in pre-war buildings once I moved out of the conference room. And I like that there's a mix of old and young. I like that spice of New York that you don't always get.
Right. And also kind of different class levels living next door to each other.
Right. I'm not, people that have been in the building 35 years versus those that just moved in.
Yeah. I like that. I do think it feels a little suburban as of late.
Well, I mean, having actually grown up in suburbia in the Midwest, where everyone's the same age, everyone's in the same life stage, everyone goes to the same church.
Right.
You know.
It's a little different.
It's not suburbia. I think it feels suburbia because you've mastered it.
Right.
Right? You've kind of seen every nook and cranny of the city, though there's still those moments of surprises.
No, I'm still unfolding things that I didn't know about, and I've been here almost 12 years. This is the thing about this city. I feel like staying here for whatever amount of time is an accomplishment here. Like, I have celebrated my anniversaries here. I think people do that. I know a lot of people. It's like an accomplishment. Like, I survived a year of war. I survived a year of boot camp or whatever. And I don't think people in other cities do that as much. I think there is...
Yeah, I mean, I think we just have different perspectives. Because for me, going back and living, if I had to live a year where I came from, I would have to celebrate survival there. where like here, I just feel comfortable.
But right?
It didn't take long for me to... So I'll tell you one story. I remember like the first, not the first night, but the second night in the city, I met up with an old friend, mm-hmm. the friend from whom you're taking the sofa.
Yes.
And, you know, he's, you know, foreign born, but a New Yorker through and through. Very fashionable and has that edge. And so he was like, come meet me in Chelsea for dinner. And I remember we went to Rocking Horse, and I just remember like walking down the street and feeling so out of place, right? I feel like I wasn't wearing the right clothes and I didn't know which way to go. And now what's so funny is every time I walk by the Rocking Horse, I have that moment and think like, wow, that was so then. And now, you know, it's so different.
It's so different. One of my favorite stories was when I ran into you in the subway platform. And I had absolutely... I was in shock. I September of 2006. I'm not even kidding.
Right. So when I first moved here, I had subway phobia. And it wasn't just because of who I would mix with. It was more I literally had a genuine fear of a subway bombing.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's why you kept taking cabs?
That was my... Like, I had a fear of a terrorist attack on the subway.
Oh, my God.
So that was the only thing.
I thought you were an elitist.
No. No, because I moved to London September 10th, 2001.
Oh,
God. So once everything happened the next day, I lived it all from afar. Mm-hmm. So I was always, even like, and that's where that fear of I remember taking the London tube and during that week and feeling like, wow, there could be a terrorist attack in here. So it kind of just, like, it's that fear stuck with me. And then that just led to this habit of taking taxis everywhere. Which is financially...
Excuses.
No. But financially isn't...
It's not great.
No, and when London had those bus bombings, like, I went right back to taking a taxi for a while before I felt comfortable.
Well, what I found funny was the reason you were taking the subway.
Right. So the reason I was taking the subway is that I had come to buy... I just grabbed cash, and I hadn't grabbed my credit card. So I had taken a subway down to the West Village to buy chocolates for a special event...
expensive chocolates.
Right. They're like gourmet Keys chocolates.
Of course. Only the best for Stephen McCullen.
And so I ran, they would only take cash. And so I was like, oh my gosh. So I didn't have enough cash or a credit card to take a taxi back home. And at that point, taxis didn't take credit cards.
They didn't?
No.
2006, they did not?
No.
Oh my God.
So this is a very new phenomenon. So I remember, yeah. So you were like, what are you doing here? I was like, I ran out of money because I bought chocolates.
Because I bought really expensive chocolates, and now I have to take the subway with the peasants. So how does London compare to New York?
It really doesn't, because the difference, I don't know if I can accurately compare, because in London I was an expat.
Right.
And there's not a huge amount of love for Americans in London.
Right.
So, you know, I was working there and people would make comments like, oh, he's the American, as if it was a bad thing. So, you know, London is also not as convenient in New York. Like, if you want to eat dinner at midnight in London, you can't, right? Everything closes down. Oddly, they closed down the subway, of all things, like an hour before the bars close.
Oh.
So that everyone's left taking a taxi or the bus. Like, it's just, it's, so those things don't really work. There's no customer service mentality there like there is here.
Yeah, and also I think you really nailed it in what you said at first. You were always an outsider in London, and in New York you can always be an insider. You can always find that enclave community.
Right.
You can walk down the street. No one will look at you.
Community in London. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, in general, you can be part of the melting pot.
Right.
Here without anyone looking at you twice. No
right.
one can be bothered with that. They're too busy.
Right.
Except when they're friendly and helping you.
Right.
And I think people in New York are salt of the earth for the most part.
I mean, I think I'm getting ready to leave. And I don't really, like, that's like when I moved here, I wasn't sad to leave London.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not necessarily sad to leave New York. Like, I'm sure I'll miss people and my relationships will change, but I'm more excited about the next chapter. And I'm just not sure where that is yet.
Awesome. Well, I think New York has catapulted you into what you did with it then. Okay, thank you very
thank you
much.
So much.
With my second guest today, we're going on the other side of the Leaving New York coin. While Stephen McCullen has spent 10 years here and has decided it's time to move on, our guest Kate Thomas did it. She left New York. She left New York after 5 years, and I will let her speak to what kind of fear this embodies in people, because it does. I think the reason I've stayed here this long, almost 12 years now, is I'm scared that when I go, I don't know where I'm going to go, and it's going to be even harder to come back. Coming back a second time can be way harder than the first, even though you have a community established. You know how hard it is, and the first time you're ignorant. You're just green, and you're just showing up to do what you have to do, and you don't have anything in your mind stopping you. And I think in my mind, I might not be able to come back if I left. So welcome, Kate. On that note, so everyone has a date. They moved to New York, mm-hmm. whether you remember it or not. Do you remember yours?
It was September 2008.
Okay, September 2008. 2008 was a good year. Except, of course, financially in the world. But
for me personally,
it was a good year. So how'd you move here? What mode of transportation did you use?
I used a plane.
Okay. Your own?
It was not my own. I believe it was Virgin America.
Okay.
And I came for grad school. I got into NYU journalism. And that's why I came to New York City thinking I would stay for a year and a half and afterwards book it back home to Los Angeles.
Okay, so you came from L.A., which is considered, you know, kind of the opposite of New York as far as America goes.
The polar opposite. Well, it's not opposite in terms of being, you know, a city where lots of business is happening and a lot of what they do is sent out around the world. It makes an impact on the world. But as far as your quality of life and living, it's completely different.
Had you ever been here before?
Yes, many times. And I'd worked here before over summers or over stints of time. I'm a producer, so sometimes I'd come for, you know, an independent film I was producing or different projects. And I always had the feeling that whenever I came to New York, it was the time period in which I worked harder than mm-hmm. anywhere, any other time in my life.
Yep.
So that was just this theme. So when I knew I was coming here, I knew I was going to work hard, but on what I didn't know other than school projects.
How did you feel about that? Were you ready? Why did you apply here?
I applied because before I was in television. I was working in television and in narrative and comedy and drama, stuff like that. And I realized I didn't want to work in that realm of things. I wanted to be much more focused on documentary. Mm-hmm. And I felt like here in New York, I could find some like-minded people. I could find people who really wanted to get into the documentary world, and that's why I came here. I did get into Columbia, NYU, and a school in London, but I wanted to be in New York.
So you wanted to be a cosmopolitan, definitely.
Yes,
you were
definitely.
Kind of done with plastic surgery and palm trees.
I was. I wasn't feeling a kinship with my mm-hmm. fellow Angelinos anymore. I wanted.
Is that
more.
What they're called, Angelinos?
That's what we call
I didn't
ourselves.
Even know that. Right. Oh, that's what you call yourselves. That's different than what they're called.
Well, people don't know that we call that. That's what we're called, but we know. So
well,
I
now they know
because
my podcast is ranked number one in the world. So okay. Now everybody will know.
Well, I'm glad to help. I'm about helping people.
Okay, so you know what I noticed when I went to LA to visit my friend about 5 years ago, uh-huh. the thing that I remember most about being shocked was that I showed up at 3 p.m. She was still at work, and I showed up at her house, turned on the TV, and in every commercial break, there were at least two commercials for plastic surgery.
Yes.
And that, you know, yeah, sure, people are like to prolong youth in New York and in America just as much as they do in LA, but I did find it profoundly more.
The cost of living mm-hmm. is a little more economical in Los Angeles than mm-hmm. it is here. And the values that people have in LA are a little skewed. So mm-hmm. when they have some extra cash, they're going to spend it on, some people are going to spend it on making themselves look better.
I personally spend it on trips. I think you do too.
Yes, that's where I put my extra cash. I'm a traveler.
But I think it's not just about having more money, because the cost of living in Cleveland is less than New York.
No, it's the value set there.
Yeah.
It's the emphasis on pretty and young and fit.
Yeah. Not just fit, like really thin. But anyway, and with big boobs. But that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
You are stereotyping.
Yeah, I am.
You are. And, you know, with... It's not like you're being correct, but yeah. It's not the whole of the city.
No, it's not. Angelinos are a little more well-rounded than that, or at least the ones I hang out with.
Yeah.
Okay, so you moved here. Do you feel like when you moved here, like the night you slept here, you were in a dorm, or were you at a friend's house, or what?
I had a studio.
Oh, you did? Okay,
yeah.
So you were kind of living it up. A studio is living it up in New York.
Well, I remember, you know, before I moved here, mm-hmm. I came and looked for... studios, mm-hmm. apartments. Well, I thought I was looking for a one bedroom, and then I realized that was not going to happen.
Oh my God.
I was mortified.
Yeah.
I got a broker because I was scared. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know anything. So I got a broker to help me.
The only city with a broker's fee, right? For rentals.
For rentals? I actually do not know that statistic.
But it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because you pay like a few grand for a broker.
You pay like... They get 15%, or like the broker gets 15%
of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of frickin' money.
So if you have one broker for the whole deal, they get the full 15. But if you get a broker who is representing the renter and then the owner, then they split the 15.
Yeah.
Anyways, in any case, it's a complete ripoff. The guy did find me an okay place, a great place in Murray Hill.
Which is not really a student vibe.
No, I
fun.
Didn't know anything. I didn't know anything, and not only that, I signed a 2-year lease.
And so you only wanted to be here a year and a half.
I was stuck in Murray Hill for two years.
For those of you who don't know, Murray Hill is where fun goes to die.
it's in Manhattan, and when you're not from here, they say, oh, it's close to Grand Central Station. It's like 2 miles from Grand Central
you're
Station.
You're like, great, I can go to Connecticut.
Yeah. And there's no transportation over there. I mean, there's buses, but besides... That
no, there's the, what was that cafe on the corner we'd go to?
Shoot, I don't even remember.
I don't either. But Murray Hill is like near the United Nations, and it's just a really, it's
a
lot of, it is a novelty, but to live there every day, do you need to live with a novelty every day? I mean, look, it wasn't your fault, you didn't know, but I feel like that could set a tone where you live, your neighborhood, right?
Totally sets a tone.
Yeah. How did it set a tone?
I think for me, it really made me feel like, I wasn't part of the city, or I didn't get it, you know, like, why live with all this craziness around you, when I wasn't having the experience of step out your door and, oh, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was step out your door and battle the crowds and the smells and the crazy people, because Bellevue is right there, and...
Oh, God.
it's a big shock. L.A. is scrubbed clean, at least, you know, where I've spent most of my years in L.A., and it's clean. They say there's smog, but really the air is much nicer, much cleaner than here. There's beach, there's sun. You know, you're in your car, you don't have to interact with people. And here in New York, I suddenly felt like I was constantly in a crowded mall. Mm. I wanted to shoot myself. Even, you know, I walked out of my apartment door, got in the elevator in the mornings, and was sandwiched in between all the people in my building. And then you walk down the street, and then I had to go to Grand Central Station.
Why?
Which was,
oh, that's what you
that
took?
Was the closest station to me. And in the mornings,
oh, yes, yeah. For people who don't mayhem. Know, that's also a subway station. It's not just where trains from Connecticut come in and out.
Yeah. So needless to say, it's a hub of transportation and very busy in the mornings. And
so you'd before you even get to school, you're angry.
I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
You know, in L.A., you're in your car, you get to choose when you interact with people.
Right.
You leave your house in your pajamas because you know you're not going to see anyone. It doesn't matter.
Did you keep that habit here ever?
I couldn't. I was too embarrassed. I think I tried to leave my house to go to the corner deli in my pajamas once. I know that doesn't sound like people from New York say that they do that, but...
I don't do that. Okay. I go out in workout clothes.
Okay.
But I don't go out in pajamas.
In L.A., workout clothes is what you wear year-round. We don't have much style there. Like, I know that there's an impression that L.A. has style.
Yeah, there is.
But if you really are from L.A., you realize that everyone is in yoga clothes all the time, whether they're wearing yoga or not, if they're doing yoga or not. And then they wear flip-flops or Uggs year-round as well.
Yeah, you can wear Uggs in the summer in LA. I know about Uggs and, like, short shorts and sweatshirts and that weird Paris Hilton look she started 12 years ago.
That's still persistent.
Still happening.
Hardtail pants.
So were your classmates from all over the world or New York, or I'm trying to get a sense of like what your community was the first year or first few years.
Sure. My community consisted of my classmates who mm-hmm. were a big mix. Half of them, we were only like 20 kids. So half of them were from the US and had flown here and moved here from different parts of the country. And then the other half were from all over the world and they had just moved here as well. So I had one woman who was an Iraqi, mm-hmm. one person from the Philippines, Chile, it goes on. Anyways, so very international, and we were making documentaries, being thrown out into the city, go find stories. Mm-hmm. And my beat neighborhood was the Hispanic neighborhoods in Jackson Heights, Queens, mm-hmm. Which was fascinating as well.
I bet you like that.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I've chose that. I wasn't part of an established world here. We were all kind of just making it mm-hmm. as we went, and we didn't know what this was.
You were using kind of New York and school to give you what you needed for you, but you weren't necessarily thinking to stay here.
I was not thinking to stay here. I was planning my return to LA. Mm-hmm. I just had some of my stuff in storage, thinking I would move right back. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to get stuck here because I have this fantasy that I should live near my family, and most of my family lives in Los Angeles.
So why did you stay? What happened? You stayed longer than someone. I mean, for someone who only wanted to stay a year and a half, you stayed 5 years.
Well, a couple things happened. Okay. I met a guy.
Ah!
Yeah. Who I fell head over heels for.
Uh-huh.
And I also got offered a job right after grad school, and it was a job I couldn't turn down.
Jobs help.
So job, boy, I stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, so during that time, like, you're out of school, you now have a job, which is a big deal. When was that? 08 to 2 years. So 2010, when no one was getting jobs, basically. Yeah. You had a guy in a city where no one's getting guys.
Right. And we moved in together.
Oh, shoot. That's three big things in one.
Yeah.
Did he move into your place?
No, we got a place together.
Okay. What area?
In Chelsea.
Okay. That's a better area than Murray Hill.
Much better.
West Side's better.
Yes.
West Side's the best side.
West Side is the best side. And it was wonderful. It was a little fairy tale.
Okay.
And I emphasized the word fairy tale because it did not last.
Why was it a fairy tale?
It was not real. No, it was great. It was just a relationship that was, I think, doomed from the start, which I...
Why? Because he was from New York?
Because he was from New Jersey,
actually. Oh, no!
No, he's from New Jersey, and it just was not... Mm-hmm. We weren't fitted for each other.
Yeah, I got you. Relationships end, especially in New York, where you have to live together in prison quarters,
yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
I live with my boyfriend in a studio, and... Sometimes we'll be invited to really fun things, and I will not go just so I can have the apartment to myself. And I'll be like, you have to go, because I want to move from the bed to the couch without having to ask someone to move.
Oh, my God.
It's, like, really close quarters. I mean, luckily we get along and have the same taste in TV shows, so...
That's huge,
yeah,
actually.
No, it's huge, because you could stream for hours, and if you're both happy and content streaming... Mm-hmm. It's like putting on a YouTube like clip for a baby.
Streaming. That's like a word now.
Yeah, I know.
But we stream in the evenings.
Yeah, it's better than screaming, right?
Yes, it is. It is, like my neighbors.
So, I mean, I'd like to get a sense of how you felt. I feel like you were conflicted about the city for the whole 5 years you lived here.
Yeah.
And the last three, you weren't even in graduate school. So did you hate it? Did you love it? I mean, did you feel like you found... You have to kind of dig yourself a little anchor here. Did you ever feel like you did that, or?
Yeah, I mean, like most New Yorkers, they'll say, you know, it's a love-hate relationship. Mm-hmm. I loved it because New York really forces you to become a new person.
Yeah.
You have to become, you know, much more tolerant of noise, of smells, of expending your energy to commute, especially as an LA person. Mm-hmm. And you have to learn how to be quick and stand up for yourself. Mm-hmm. In LA, when you're at a restaurant, this is how you order. You say, I would like the Caesar salad and the tea. Thank you. If you order like that in New York, they will slap you. So you have to.
How do you order in New York?
Caesar salad and tea. Thank you.
That's funny. I didn't know you could order like that.
That is how you order. When you call someone on the phone, hi, your voice has to go up a few octaves. That's the polite thing in LA.
Right.
And at least that's what I thought. And
they don't deal with, like...
You can't order from, you know, a restaurant to delivery in a high-pitched voice because they'll yell at you. The Chinese guy will yell at you mm-hmm. at the Chinese restaurant.
You can't really be direct in LA.
No.
Because I found
that... You have to be demure as a woman.
When I ask, as a woman, what about as a man?
As a man? I don't know. Ask a man.
Yeah, exactly. Because I found in LA, like, say, with business, mm-hmm. nobody really says no. They're just silent.
They say, yeah, oh, that's
one day.
Yeah.
It's like silence plus time is a no. Right. In New York, people will say no right away. And then 2 months later, suddenly it's like there's an opportunity there.
Right.
But at least because here they don't want to waste your time.
Yeah.
Time is of the essence here. Time and space are huge things here.
Yeah.
Huge.
Well, you asked about a niche, mm-hmm. building a niche here in New York. And I think one thing that I really love about it here is that you don't have to plan in advance. You know, you just call your friends and you guys get together. People come over. You know, grown women have sleepovers regularly. Mm-hmm. It's just
here?
Yeah.
They do?
Oh, I do with my girlfriends.
Maybe you're not as grown as you think.
Maybe I'm not. But, you know, there's much more community. Mm-hmm. And with my girlfriends here, the ones from school and the ones I made at work, we connect, mm-hmm. And we're all hustling to achieve our dreams,
right.
and we're in it together.
Right.
In LA, it's just different. People there are more family oriented. They're more traditional path oriented, and so for me, that is definitely that was hard to adjust to. And now that I'm back, I'm like, wait, am I a freak? Like,
right.
that I want to pursue my career and not care about family until later in life?
Well, here, I think when there's adversity, which New York really is, I mm-hmm. mean, there's a lot of adversity here just day to day, people bond. It's like bonding in the trenches.
Right.
I always say this on the show, off the show, it's a war. It is kind of a war, and it's definitely an uphill struggle. Mm-hmm. And, in L.A., see, when I was on the West Coast, it wasn't L.A., but it was, like, the Northwest.
Yeah.
I found the two biggest differences are, on the West Coast, people hang out through shared activities. And on the East Coast, I grew up just hanging out with people. Like, my best friend Isabel would pick me up in her white Mitsubishi when we were 16. We didn't know where we were going. We were just hanging out. We're getting in the car, smoking a cigarette or whatever, other things. Listening to music. So here there's a lot of hanging out. You just meet up because there's a lot of person-to-person value.
Right.
And I found on the West Coast, it's like, what do you have in common? And let's do it around that.
Are we doing yoga together?
Yes.
Or are we going to the beach together?
Do we both have families? So let's go to the barbecue or whatever.
But I do think that New York will make you. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll make you into a more, you know, a more effective, more busy, more ambitious person than if you're coming from most any other place. Mm-hmm. It will make you understand business in a different way. It will make you understand what you're capable of. At least that's what it did for me. Every time I've come here, I've worked really hard. And I think it's worth it. It's worth being pressed to figure out your own potential because we don't know our own potentials until we are given the chance to stand up. So that's why I think New York is a great place for people. But I do worry about people getting stuck here in the sense of having experienced what they can do and then feeling like they are trapped and can't go back.
That's how a lot of people feel. But you proved differently. You did leave.
But I came from a city that is not, you know, a small town.
Yeah.
for the people who come from small towns, well, you're just screwed.
But even a small town, because, you know, I've talked about this before, it's a calling card. You get the experience here, and you can go be a really big deal somewhere else. Your hometown, not as in a big deal as in reputation, but you can go do a lot with the experience here. It means a lot.
Yeah. Reputation is good too, big too, but also, you can. Yeah.
But I don't mean an ego way, like I'm a big deal. I mean, like, you could go get a great job in your small hometown.
And you will rock that job in ways that, like, people who didn't get that New York experience won't be able to do. That's
it's true. Boot camp.
It's boot camp. That's what New York is. I always felt like walking through New York City was like a video game. That was how I was able to not go crazy in the beginning when I first moved here. Because, you know, there's that cliche, which is quite true, of New Yorkers feeling like they have to always be moving when you're on the sidewalk. And I felt like it was a video game. How can I not stop moving?
Yep.
You know, no matter what. So if I have to zigzag across town, always getting the green lights, always getting the walking men, that was my game. Oh, and then I had another game. So you have to create ways to survive here.
Yep.
So when I was walking down the street in the beginning, I would literally, you know, make it a game to not stop walking, and then you fit in. My other thing was, I realized sometimes New York just leaves you in a fucked up situation. Sometimes it's a blizzard outside, and it's freezing cold, and you're really far away from transportation, and there are no cabs, and you are wearing heels, and you don't have enough clothes on, and you are stranded.
We don't know why you don't have enough clothes on. That's New York. That's
my LA problem. That's my West Coast problem. But, you know, sometimes stuff like that happens, or things happen where you just don't get your way.
And yes.
You know? And so I would just do that. I played another game with New York, where sometimes New York would win and sometimes I would win. And that was how I could be okay with living here. It was a strange coping.
It sounds like a solitary confinement coping thing, where you start making games in your own head and you think it exists in the world just to be able to spend another day in New York City.
It's very true.